Swagoo and Perk, a new ESPN podcast led by its namesake host, former NFL veteran and analyst Mark Spears, a.k.a. Swagoo, and NBA champion and analyst Kendrick Perkins. With new episodes every Tuesday morning, Spears and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as a look inside their lives, career journey with can't-miss conversations, and welcome in top sports and celebrity guests. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Welcome to the latest Daily Wager Extra podcast. We are taping this Sunday night on Halloween. We are officially losers. By we, I mean I am Doug Kazarian alongside Mackenzie Kramer as we are talking gambling in the NFL. Matt, good to be back with you, man.
Hey, speak for yourself about being losers. I had a pretty good day today, and the Jets actually got a nice win. So it was a fun day watching football. I was hoping that I'd still be at the World Series of Poker. I entered the Colossus this week, made day two, got knocked out the first hand today. And luckily, since I got knocked out the first hand, I was able to get back home and watch all the NFL games today.
All right. Good stuff on that front. So congratulations to your New York Jets. And we finally have a notable upset in the Survivor pools. And you had mentioned this last week on the pod that we hadn't seen an upset of an underdog of 7.5 or more points win outright. And we get that with your New York Jets. And I missed the questionable call with the Bengals. What was it?
There was a third down and long. There was a simple tackle. If he just makes a normal tackle, it would have been a fourth down. The Jets would be punting back to the Bengals. I believe they would have had two timeouts left. But they called lowering the crown of the helmet as a tackler, basically making a helmet-to-helmet hit, gave the Jets a first down. Then the Jets were able to get one more first down and ice the game at that point. It was a really dicey call on another day full of dicey calls in the NFL.
Yeah, so I want to get into more of the big chalk and how they fared. I want to start here, though, with the game that just ended tonight. Cowboys and Vikings. Obviously, we had significant line movement. It all started Thursday when the news surfaced that Dak's health was up in question, and weren't really sure if he was going to play. It wasn't even his call. It was more like a precautionary move given the comfortable lead they have in the NFC East. And I guess, what was it, 2.5-point favorites early in the week for the Cowboys. And then Thursday we saw some move. The Vikings became favorites of 3. And where did we officially close as?
It was 4 at Caesars. I saw 4.5 at lots of places, but 4 is the official number we're going with at ESPN. But yeah, I mean, you talk about the line movements. We saw the Titans go from road favorites to the underdogs. They won outright. The Cowboys go from road favorites to underdogs. They won outright. Even going back to Thursday night with the Cardinals and the Packers, we saw that line move a lot toward the Cardinals, and the Packers won that game outright. So a lot of line movement not going the way of with the other team winning out as a dog in those games.
So what I talked about all week once this Dak stuff started, and I really tried to make it a thing, and no one really seemed to understand what I was trying to say, and I made it my best bet this morning, and when it was 51.5 was the under. So I talked about Dak and the shift and the adjustment on the side being significant, and rightfully so, but I felt the total should have come down just given how, you know, solid he's been as an MVP candidate from the quarterback position. And Cooper Rush, I mean, give him all the credit in the world for the big win tonight, but I just didn't feel like the total was moving enough, especially with what the Vikings have done at home the last handful of years. Back pre-COVID, the previous 3 years, they were top 5 in red zone defensive efficiency. Third down conversion or something like that. But all 4 games now at Minneapolis have gone under the total. So the defense just plays much better at home. And then obviously the Dak factor, I thought the total was way high. So we get there with ease. Opening drive didn't look so good. It was 7-0. And then the second team trying to answer ended up botching things at midfield. But nonetheless, I was surprised the market didn't move enough. But we got down there in terms of a big number, though.
Well, we talked about that game on Thursday because the lines switched from Cowboys to favorite to Minnesota as favorites about less than an hour before showtime on Thursday. And the one thing I noticed, and I brought it up to you guys, was the total didn't move at all, which I didn't understand at all, because Dak Prescott to Cooper Rush, not only is that a big downgrade, but it also affects the way that both teams want to play. So I agreed with you. I bet that line tonight at 49.5. I bet it at 51.5. I bet that under a couple times. So I was completely with you on that read of the game. I didn't understand why that total didn't move as much as it did.
Yeah, I was really surprised, and I made it my best bet, like I said, this morning. So big win for the Cowboys. Vikings had every opportunity, continue to botch things. My season win total on the under in Dallas is, you know, up in flames essentially at this point, but it is what it is. So Cowboys, by the way, still perfect against the spread, 7-0 now. All the Mike McCarthy criticism, and I am, you know, first in line there. But the guy is a lot of wins, and this year he has a lot of covers.
Yeah, and if you look at it, in the last 40 seasons, they're the fourth team to start 7-0 or better against the spread. You have the 2018 Chiefs were 7-0, the 2008 Titans were 7-0, and then, of course, the 2007 Patriots went 16-0 in the regular season. They started 8-0 against the spread that year, so that's the kind of company the Cowboys are keeping right now. And one other stat that I liked about that game, too, we also talked about with the Jets, is that entering today, quarterbacks making their first NFL start were 0-6 ATS and straight up this season. Their teams are averaging 12.7 points per game. And then tonight you have Mike White and the Jets winning as 11.5 point dogs. And then you have Cooper Rush and the Cowboys winning as underdogs. And even Trevor Siemian came off the bench and helped lead the Saints to victory in that game.
Yeah, I know. We've been talking about these guys out of nowhere starting this year. And then finally Cooper Rush gets him into the win column. But Mike White, I had a feeling the Jets were live. Let's just go and putting a bow on that game, given the Bengals off the big win earlier this year. That's when I used Cincinnati, the survivor. They survive against the Jaguars on that Thursday night. So a giant flat spot. And obviously the Jets took care of business. But that was just too many points for the Bengals to be laying on the road. Okay, so we've covered a lot of Jets talk. We've met our quota for the month. Let's go to some other games that I found pretty interesting. Just talk about the chalk at first. So we had another backdoor cover by the Texans against the Rams.
Yeah, that was crazy. Rams up 38-0, winning 38-22. That line was 14.5 for much of the week, but it closed at 16.5, which means that Houston covered that spread. So since 2000, there have been 229 games, including the playoffs, where a team led by at least 35 points, including today. The Rams, out of those 229 teams, the only one not to cover the spread. The only other game where even the team had a 30-point lead and didn't cover, you'll remember this game, was the Jets and the Patriots 2 years ago. Patriots led 30-0. Jets scored the final two touchdowns on a fumble return on a muff punt and then a pick six from Jared Stidham to Jamal Adams, who actually caught the ball that time. So those are the only two examples of a team leading a game by 30 and not covering the spread in since 2000.
Yeah, I believe I had the Patriots in that game. Also, the Jets team total under in that game. That was a tough one with Stidham throwing the pick six. Buffalo was really interesting. This was 3-3. The game was in jeopardy, and all of a sudden they end up covering. How on earth did this happen? They won by 16.
Yeah, that was a crazy game in that one. I mean, the Dolphins are we talk about the Jaguars, we talk about the Jets, we talk about the Texans being the worst team in football. The Dolphins have to be in that conversation, though.
Really, though?
I mean, well, if you look at the line next week against Houston, the odds makers wouldn't agree with that because the Dolphins are laying 7 against the Texans next week. But this Dolphins team is absolutely miserable. They've lost 7 straight since going on the road and beating New England in week one. But this Bills defense is really, really good. The offense hasn't been unbelievable. I don't think this game really helps Josh Allen's MVP case all that much, even though they do get the win. But that defense has been arguably the best in the NFL all year, and they shut down the Dolphins again today.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking about Miami next week in Survivor, but we have plenty of time to sweat out that decision. I first got to get the Chiefs home tomorrow night, and that's no layup here. So that game was certainly interesting because I was sweating it out. I had Buffalo in one of my Survivor pools, but just I was keeping an eye on the Dolphins because they shouldn't be this bad. They should not be 1-7, but they are. But there were some other games. I think the big one that we talked about so much during the week was the one in the AFC South with Titans Colts. Colts jump out 14-0. There was a fluky call in there early that swung things, but ultimately Carson Wentz is Carson Wentz, man. The guy turns the ball over, and he did what everyone sort of thought he would, even reuniting with Frank Reich this year.
Titans are now 5-0 ATS this year against teams that made the playoffs from last year. They keep winning as underdogs. We talked about it earlier. They were favored in that game in the early line. That line switched to the Colts -3, but just like some of the other games, the Titans got the outright win as a dog. And the Titans 6-2 this year. I don't think anybody had the Titans being the one seed in the AFC 8 weeks into the season, but that division is basically on ice now, up 3 games on the Colts with both head-to-head matchups going to Tennessee so far.
So Carson Wentz throws the pick, the left-handed pick, by the way, at the end of regulation. But the fact that it was that and not a safety actually worked in the Colts' favor because the pick six gave them the ball back, and then in a tie game, so they were down 7, and then gave them a chance to force overtime, which they did. And they got the ball in overtime even, but just couldn't do anything with it. And then ultimately Tennessee did.
Yeah, and another Ryan Tannehill over in that game. Ryan Tannehill continues to be an over machine with the Titans.
Steelers-Browns was a kind of a chic upset pick by some, and that actually delivered +180 or so on the money line for Pittsburgh. Defensive battle, don't overthink it. I talked about it. Tyler and Joe were on the under. I was on the first half up under. It was at 3-3 at the break. Everything got there. 15-10, your final. The Browns just, they've got to be one of the more disappointing teams this season, if not the most. I think KC takes the cake on that, but I think Browns are right there after that.
I mean, and I talked about Miami. I think Miami's got to be in that mix as well. Their win total was, what, 9.5, something like that entering
the
year?
Right, but people didn't know what to expect with Miami, right? We weren't. We thought, some of us thought Tua could be bad.
I thought with that division, it was basically the Bills were number one. Miami and New England were both flawed as number two. Take your pick. And then the Jets, a distant fourth. I thought the Jets might have more upside if Zach Wilson were good, but obviously he hasn't been that good. But back to the Browns and Steelers game. You mentioned the unders. Unders in Big Ben games on the road since 2015, hitting 76% of the time, 38-12-1. So Big Ben, we always talk about how good he is at Heinz Field. Well, he's not so good on the road, and that's definitely showed in the total results in the last few years.
Saints and Bucks was a big one when we get to the afternoon. We'll go back to some of the earlier games, but I want to talk about this game because I was on New Orleans. We talked about it all week, what that New Orleans defense did to Tom Brady last year. Dominated both regular season meetings, actually fared pretty well in the postseason, but it was the Bucs defense that forced turnovers and really won that game for them. And then you lose Jameis Winston. So Trevor Siemian comes in, Sean Payton takes the leash off the collar, lets him sling it, and some of those decisions were a little shaky, but ultimately Tom Brady was unable to make the right plays.
I live bet Tampa Bay in that game. I was feeling pretty good when they cut it to a 2-point game in the middle of the second half, but obviously didn't come through. Bucks are 0-4 against the spread on this year, which is a little bit crazy. But we talk about the
on the road, right? 0-4 ATS on the road.
0-4
right?
ATS on the road. You're correct. And the Saints is a home dog under Peyton. 12-3 ATS, 10-5 straight up. So the Saints continue to cash as a home dog under Sean Payton. But this Saints team, kind of a strange team. If you watch the megacast with the Manning brothers on Monday night, Brady talked about how athletic the Saints defense, and it definitely showed up on the field. But the Saints team, I've had a tough time figuring that all year. Basically, the way I treat the Saints is if they're a dog, I'll bet on them outright. And if they're a favorite, I'm going to fade them. And this year as an underdog, they're 3-0 outright with all three wins by at least two scores.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
By the way, I need to comment some of the noise in the background, just my dog messing around with the bone and things like that. Had to babysit him in here in the kitchen, but he's an underdog. He's a big underdog player. Yeah, Arthur making his snorting as well. And he made his small screen debut today, by the way, with his Elvis costume alongside me. So we had some fun with him.
I saw your costume. On air. Looked pretty nice today, all you guys, on Daily Wager. I didn't wake up that.
It was fun.
I didn't wake up that early. I just saw the screenshots on Twitter.
Yeah, the Macho Man outfit was incredible. And Slater was spot on, too. So we had a lot of fun there. But yeah, Arthur's feeling he's just feeling the fame early. I mean, you know, it's going to his head right now.
One last thing on the Saints, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Saints Falcons, the look ahead line next week was 5.5. It's now 5. It sounds like Taysom Hill's going to be back next week. But if Trevor Siemian plays, I have to imagine that line might move toward Atlanta. But I don't know. What do you
not
think
as
about
much.
That line?
Not that. Not all the way. Yeah, I mean, towards Atlanta. But Atlanta's not going
to
be favored.
Of course not. I would say that might go to like 4, though, with maybe 3.5.
Sorry, I misunderstood. Okay. I was just disappointed with how Brady played a little bit in that game. Some of those picks, I mean, I know they're fast. I know the defense is good, but, you know, some of that was a little bit of a head-scratching, some of those throws, just because I expect such greatness when he takes the field. Going back to the earlier games, Panthers-Falcons was a game I wanted no part of. I didn't want to watch it. I didn't want to bet on it. But the Panthers kind of got a win, and the Falcons did Falcons things.
And not watching that game, I think, was probably the best solution. Every time I would watch that game, it looked like Sam Darnold was getting destroyed. He took one big hit, and then I think it was either the next play or two plays later, he took a concussive hit that knocked him out of the game. He had 66 yards rushing, only 129 through the air. But this Atlanta team, now Calvin Ridley's on a leave of absence for mental health reasons. So Atlanta, I don't know if they have enough weapons to really keep up with some of these other teams without him. I mean, Tajay Sharp was their leading receiver today. Kyle Pitts didn't do much of anything for Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big news with Ridley developing. Obviously, we wish him the best on that moving forward. But Falcons dropped to 3-4. Panthers back in the mix a little bit. at 4-4. Eagles Lions was another game I wanted no part of, but I will say this: the public was backing Detroit, winless yet 4-3 ATS. Although that Week One game, I mean, come on, we really know what happened there. But the Eagles just curb stomped them from the start.
Neither of those teams had been favored all year. I wasn't quite sure where to go in that game, but clearly the right side was Philadelphia. Detroit, like you mentioned, was 4-3 against the spread entering this week. So I guess a lot of people wanted to back them, hoping they get their first win at home against an Eagles team that had been struggling. But this was the Eagles team that a lot of people hoped that they would be entering the year, finally showing up in Week 8 at Detroit.
So Detroit goes to 4-4, and we'll see where their first outright win could potentially come on the schedule. Some people were circling that one. It did not materialize, unfortunately, for them. I thought 49ers-Bears was a sneaky good game. I was just saying, I said on air this morning, I was like, my gut just tells me the Bears are going to get it done. We know Shanahan in the favorite role doesn't really deliver. He's terrible at home favorite. But I thought they'd get there, and they eventually did. But it was certainly a tight game back and forth.
I was just excited to see that the Bears had a pulse on offense, because that was one thing that we hadn't seen any. We had seen very few signs of life in that Bears offense, but they finally let Justin Fields run the ball today at 103 yards on the ground, including that highlight reel 22-yard touchdown run. But the 49ers offense played very well today. Elijah Mitchell on the ground. He looks like a late-round steal going after Trey Sermon in the draft, getting 137 on the ground today. Deebo Samuel, along with Cooper Kupp, one of the fantasy MVP candidates to begin the year. So big win for San Francisco on the road in that one.
Yeah, where is he from? Louisiana, right? Yeah. Elijah Mitchell?
Correct. Louisiana Lafayette, right. Raging Cajuns. Actually, just called the Louisiana.
Another,
they're no longer Louisiana
Shanahan
Lafayette.
Find in the draft, for sure. So then the afternoon had some interesting games as well. Patriots-Chargers, one of those higher-profile games. Patriots with the upset. They go to L.A. and win like they did, what was it, a year ago, but much different situation. They had a blowout shutout win last year. This one was nip and tuck. But the Pats delivered, man. We weren't sure what to expect. Their three wins before this game were two against the Jets and one against the Houston Texans, where they nearly lost. So as well as they've played in some of those losses, like to the Cowboys where they should have won, like to the Bucks in that high-profile game with Tom Brady's return on Sunday Night Football, I didn't really know what to expect with the Pats. I had to take the points in like a pick 'em, but I wasn't going to bet on them. But today showed me something. I think this Patriots team couldn't make the playoffs, and I think my Bill Belichick Coach of the Year tickets got a little life today.
I could see that with Belichick Coach of the Year tickets. I haven't looked that closely at the Patriots schedule. I know they've already burned both their matchups against the Jets and already won against Miami. But New England, to me, like I mentioned with the Saints earlier, the New England's a team that I want to back as an underdog, and I want to fade them as a favorite. I don't trust them to put up a lot of points unless they're playing a really bad team like the Jets. But as an underdog, I think they'll be competitive. I think they can keep a lot of games close. We saw it against Dallas. We saw it against Tampa Bay. And we saw it again today when they get the outright win in L.A.
When you blindly say that in the dog roll all back, why is that? I mean, I know it's better to get points than lay points, but why these particular teams? You mentioned that with the Saints as well.
I think both of these are more run-first teams. I don't think that they're trying to blow teams out. I think they're just happy to get a win and play and kind of play a closer game. And I don't think their offenses are really explosive enough to put up the 30, 40 points that you need consistently to cover big spreads. I mean, if they're favored by 2.5 or 3 or something like that, I'm not as worried about that. But I don't really want to be taking the Patriots if they're laying like 6, 6.5. I think Belichick is fine to get a 3-point win as much as a 25-point win. So that's kind of my logic with those two teams. And I mean, with the Saints, it's definitely come true. With the Patriots, not quite as much. That might just be more of a feeling on my part, but that's kind of how I feel about those two teams.
Well, yeah, and it's a new era right now. Obviously, in year two post-Brady with Belichick, much different situation with the Pats not going to the playoffs last year, maybe on the outside looking in this year. One of the other afternoon games, I was on the dog of the day with Washington. They were in the mix, but Broncos, this was a good spot for them. I just thought it was a good chance for Washington to get back on track. But the back-to-back roadies, second game being an altitude in Denver, kind of did them in. But the Broncos, you know, they needed this. They had to snap their losing streak and get back in the mix.
I heard another podcast, and I kind of agree with that the Broncos are kind of the gatekeeper of the NFL. Like, if you're a good team, you'll beat the Broncos. If you're a bad team, they'll take care of business against you. And that was, again, the case with Washington today. Denver,
the litmus test. I like that.
I mean, that's what early in the year, they won their first three games against awful teams, and they lose four in a row against good teams, play another team with a losing record. Washington 1-7 ATS in the year right now, and they get the cover 17-10, despite Denver doing everything they could down the stretch to try to blow that game. I don't know if you saw the Denver's final possession when they were trying to kill the clock, but First down, fumble.
Oh, yeah. Recovered. Oh, yeah. The fumble.
Second down, incomplete pass. Third down, fumble, lost, giving Washington every chance to tie up this game. But Washington could not get it done.
Yeah, which team could screw up less was going to come away with the win. I saved this one because Geno Smith gets in the win column finally after losing to the Saints and then also the Steelers. Seahawks all over the Jaguars. Man, Jacksonville's pitiful. There's some people in my survivor pool that took Seattle. I was like, man, they got stones to do that. That was a gutsy play. A little risky, but I like it. Seahawks improved to 3-5. Jags 1-6 now. Seahawks cover the 4 points. And I don't know what to make of this Jags team now, because I obviously like Trevor Lawrence at times, but they stink.
Oh, yeah. They are terrible. They are firmly in the mix to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. I don't really know, or what possibly the worst team in the NFL. I don't understand what Urban Meyer is doing down the stretch either. They kick the extra point to make it 24-7, which, whatever, that's fine. You know, the game's out of reach, whatever. I can accept that. But then they go for the onside kick right after that. Like, to me, the logic doesn't really make sense. You either go all out for the win or you try to go home. I don't understand what they're doing, but I don't really understand a lot of what Urban Meyer is doing over in Jacksonville. Though you mentioned Geno Smith. Last 8 starts in the NFL, 8-0 against the spread. So make fun of Geno Smith at your own risk.
Yeah, you can't. He's a cash. He's the new like Bridgewater. He's going to replace him.
All the ex-Jets quarterbacks.
Twitter follower exactly tweeted me. He goes, "What was the money line parlay payoff of the Jets / ex-Jets quarterback parlay?" So you had Mike White winning outright today. Sam Darnold in Carolina. Geno with Seattle. Simeon with the Saints, and then Bridgewater with the Broncos, a 5-leg money line parlay. And I actually did the math on the old parlay calculator, 77-1. So if anyone was thinking Trevor Siemian might get in with an injury and did that ahead of time, that is certainly a nice payday, but a very fun thread for all those 5 victors.
Too bad the Jets couldn't, too bad Joe Flacco couldn't start somewhere else so he can get a win this week too.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any other Jets that are out there.
Josh McCown's out of the NFL, Mark Sanchez,
that all 5 of those guys covered too?
Yeah, no, they all covered.
Wow, so that's what, 20-1?
I didn't look it up. This the ex-Jets quarterback parlay seems to be your thing.
Five-leg parlays are 20-1. 4s are 10, 3s are 6, right? We know that.
Yeah, you're right, but I'm talking about money line parlay, okay. But you're right.
Oh, right, the money line, no, the 5-leg money line parlay was 77-1, so well done there. And did we miss any games? I think that was the last one, the Seahawks-Jags. It was the first one that ended in that afternoon slot. It moved right along. That went under. So the public, right? We talked about it. That was a headline the last few weeks. The public had won the last 3 weeks, especially 2 of those weeks was real big against the house. But I felt like unders cashed a little bit. I felt we had enough underdogs winning outright. That was some of the, all you need is, like the Bengals losing outright. That blows up all these parlays, right? You need sort of one piece to unlock the puzzle.
Oh, for sure. Just to recap the week, underdogs went 9-4-1 against the spread entering Monday night. They're now hitting at a 55% clip on the season. This was the first winning week for underdogs since week 3, though. It had been kind of close to 50-50 since then. Underdogs also went 8-6 straight up. So a winning outright week for the underdogs as well. So the money line parlays probably were not doing so hot this week. Road teams, 8-5-1 ATS, 9-5 straight up. 63-58 on the year. So road teams, 5 games above 500 outright, and overs and unders both went 7-7 this week. So not a whole lot to report there.
So Purdom tweeting out a few hours ago, quote from the bookmakers, "This has been our best Sunday of the season to date."
There you go.
So nice bounce back. Nice bounce back for the house, right?
It's always good. It's always good to know that when I have my good weeks, it's tend to be when the house has their good weeks. I like to be on the side of the house whenever possible.
Usually a smart approach, just hard to do that and pick all the spots and get +110. So who knew? Geno Smith, 8-0 ATS in his last 8 starts. Covers it. Eliminator, obviously the Bengals losing. First big Jenga piece to come out. We'll see what happens with the Chiefs tomorrow night, but it'll get interesting now moving forward in the coming weeks. We have Monday Night Football. I'm on the over. I know I need Chiefs and Survivor, but I think the Giants will get their points, even though some key players will be out. Daniel Jones is 10-3 ATS as a road dog. The Chiefs' offense will bounce back after last week. Mahomes already passed concussion protocol. He's good to go. I think the 3-point effort was an anomaly. they'll be back. But I also think their defense is going to be back, and their defense stinks. So I'm expecting an overplay, even though we got a big number in the neighborhood of 52.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I can't take the under, that's for sure. If I'm taking any side on the total, it would be on the over. I would also lean the Giants on the side, though. I don't think I'll bet that, just because even though the Chiefs have been so bad against the spread recently, it's so hard to fade Patrick Mahomes. The one play that I'm probably going to make is Daniel Jones on his rushing prop. I saw 21.5. He's gone over in 5 out of 7 games this year, and the Chiefs allow the most rushing yards per game to opposing quarterbacks this year. So that seems like a nice prop for me. But that's the only play I've made so far on the Monday Night Football game.
All right, man. Early look at next week's card. You know, you got a couple double digit favorites like we normally do. Got some road chalk. Got some short home favorites. You know, it's a typical NFL Sunday card.
Chiefs laying 3 against the Packers. That's probably the marquee game right now. The Packers. Wow. Aaron Rodgers is an underdog. Has been pretty good recently, so we'll see how that goes next week. I mentioned it earlier, but we talk about the good games. We have the worst game of the season next week with the Dolphins and the Texans. Dolphins laying 7 in that one. They are the first team that is 1-7 or worse to be laying a full touchdown since 1976. So that's something we don't normally see, is a 1-7 team laying a touchdown.
That's the beauty of these numbers, and it just provides context, right? The historical context in some of these numbers. I love it. Like, I'm not crazy about some of these stats that are more a byproduct of the schedule. Like, hey, the 5 double-digit favorites in week 2, the most we've ever had. I mean, I know that speaks to some of the disparity early in the season, which usually takes a few weeks to take shape. But stuff like that, that's awesome. And you mentioned the note we had with the Lions, right? First team to start 0-7 to be above 500 ATS, like just the third team ever. So things like that is really awesome. So that's a very interesting stat. Miami 1-7, but laying the full touchdown. That's how bad Houston is. Look, I think the Texans have like barely scored in like 2/3 of Davis Mills' starts. It's like, I'm just going to read you the output of points. 5, 3, 0, 9. I mean, you're looking at single digits. So yeah, you can cover big numbers against this Davis Mills led team.
45.5 was a total in that one. The under in that one stood out to me when I first looked at the numbers, and what you're telling me is helping me lean that way even more.
All right, my friend, that does it for me. You got anything else to add before we wish goodbye or wish good luck to our listeners?
Not a whole lot. A couple other stats that I had planned up. The Rams closed 16.5. What we mentioned, they were the third team in the last 20 years to be 15-point favorites in back-to-back games. The other teams to do it were the 19 Patriots and the 2007 Patriots, though the Rams didn't cover either one of those games. And then with the Bengals, they hadn't been favored by that many points on the road since 1982, 11.5-point favorites, and they lose outright. So Bengals going to bangle on the road when everybody's on the Bengals. That's when things go wrong for them.
We talked about it on radio this morning of these big favorites. Who do you feel most worried about? And it was definitely all Cincy. It was like, this is not good. They're on the road. This is not good coming off that big win. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Daily Wager Extra Podcast alongside Mackenzie Kramer and my puppy Arthur, who's now snoring in the background of this taping. I am Doug Kazarian. Remember, Daily Wager, conventional pods in and out in 10 minutes, Monday through Friday. We also have the football pod on Thursday. Mike Clay and Anita Marks do one on Friday as well. That's Daily Wager Extra, I believe. I'm not really 100% sure, or bonus or overtime, something along those lines, but a lot of good content out there. And of course, Stanford Stephen the Bear for college football. And we will see you back Tuesday, Daily Wager, 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. We'll be right back.